Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
It's considered an international embarrassment for Australia. According to our guest today, there is a crisis that's going on caused by the long-term absence of a national coordinated plan and the lack of serious commitment to building new social and affordable homes. James Toomey, the CEO of Mission Australia, wants safe and secure housing to provide the platform for children to attend school, adults to work, people to be healthy, and communities to thrive. So where are we at as a nation? Falling short in this issue of homelessness and addressing the needs. What sort of role do Christian-based welfare organisations play in addressing what many call a national crisis? James Toomey is the CEO at Mission Australia, and James joining us over this coming hour. Hello, James. Welcome along to 2020.
Hello, Neil. Thank you very much for having me.
James, I want to invite our listeners into our conversation shortly because no doubt there'll be those listening who have their own thoughts on homelessness. And we'll be talking to communities not just in capital cities around Australia, but also into regional and country outback communities where some of these issues also will be real challenges. James, this latest development on homelessness, based on some Australian Bureau of Statistics figures, what are they showing about homelessness in Australia?
Well, what they show is that between the last census period in 2011 and the this census that was taken in 2016, that homelessness across all dimensions of homelessness has gone up in Australia. And Neil, I think it's important for listeners to understand what constitutes homelessness. And we're all familiar, sadly, with the sight of rough sleepers on the streets of major cities in Australia. But rough sleeping is actually, whilst it's a significant part of homelessness, is really the visible part of homelessness. And more than 90% of people who are homeless actually are what we would describe as invisible or the non-visible bit of homelessness.
Okay, so the rough sleepers, do we have a breakdown on just how many are sleeping rough and how out of that 116,000 homeless Australians, do we have any breakdown as to how those homeless people fit into different categories?
Yes, we do. Rough sleeping is around about 8,000 people across Australia. The other categories are people who live in temporary accommodation or shelter accommodation, and people living in severe, overcrowded circumstances as well. They also make up what constitutes the statistical assessment of what constitutes homelessness. People who are living, temporarily, maybe something that's called couch surfing, where they're moving around from friends or acquaintances and staying in different places every night, but you wouldn't see them on the street as such.
Okay, what do you say, James, when people may indicate their own perception of what's happening with homelessness by saying, well, doesn't Australia have a good welfare system? Must be something deeper going on in people's lives if people are going to be homeless, because there is a welfare system and surely people can get off the street if they need to. What are your thoughts on some of these deeper issues that are driving the issue of homelessness?
I think that's a common question, Neil, and a fair one. There is a welfare system in Australia. What has happened in the past few years has been, and many people have benefited from this, house prices in Australia have been going consistently upwards. Initially this was really being flagged as, we used to get a lot of media around the fact that first-time home buyers weren't able to get into the housing market. Those first-time home buyers who can't get into the housing market then become renters and start renting in what is a very expensive rental market, which means that other people who would otherwise have rented in the market renting in renting in market housing, are unable to access that rental housing, and then the lack of affordable rental accommodation or social and affordable housing then starts to disproportionately impact on those people, which is where you see it's really fundamentally a lack of affordable housing, affordable rental housing across Australia, which is we think is one of the major causes of this increase in homelessness.
Well, I would love to savour our entire conversation this morning with the idea that there are solutions and that there may be some demonstration of what's happening with the rising numbers of homelessness, that some of the things that are initiatives that are being implemented at the moment are not working. So when we talk about solutions here, James, and you've touched on this whole idea of social housing, because home prices have been going up, rents have been sky high, people are not able to get into the market as first home buyers, and therefore they continue in a rental challenge, and sometimes the rents are too high, and that's a trigger for homelessness. So this idea of social housing, how does that help to solve or resolve the sorts of deadlocks that people get into?
Well, one of the important things about social housing as opposed to market housing is that there's the landlord, if you like, is a land, maybe a government housing department which has got many properties in its responsibility. These social houses are also delivered by organisations such as Mission Australia, which is a community housing provider, and there are many community housing providers across Australia who also provide social housing where the cost of rent is managed and tenants are supported in that accommodation to maintain their tenancies. So there's a difference there between social housing and affordable rented housing, which is generally in the private market of rental accommodation. But nevertheless, until quite recently, was affordable to many Australians, but median rents now are such that when you compare those to median salaries, and I'm sure all your listeners will be aware that salaries are flatlining at the moment, median rents are going up and salaries are flatlining, and for people who are on low incomes or minimum, particularly if you're on the minimum wage, for example, the cost of those rentals in any urban area in Australia is excessively high, part of someone's disposable salary.
Well, there may be listeners who are tuned into our conversation today and you've slept rough, or you've had to be in the circumstance where you were couch surfing, or whether you've been trying to get into the market, but the prices of property have been skyrocketing and you're wondering just how you're going to make ends meet. Well, you might like to contribute to our conversation today. As you can hear, there are a lot of different levels at which you can contribute to our conversation. I want to encourage you. You might have a question. You might have a comment to make. Our talkback lines are open on 1-800-316-316. So let's open our talkback lines on 1-800-316-316. You can also leave a comment, or you might have a question, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Vision Radio. James Toomey is our guest. He's the CEO at Mission Australia. And we're talking about issues and solutions like social housing. You've got some really specific goals in mind, haven't you, James, as to what the social housing development ought to look like in the next 10 or 12 years. What do you see as the ideal for social housing for alleviating some of this issue of homelessness?
Well, there are currently 200,000 people on the social housing waiting list across Australia. So what we see is that at least that amount of housing has to be made available to tackle this problem. But in practice, and looking at the trends over time, that would need to be more than that. So 300,000 to 500,000 affordable homes made available into the market for affordable rentals across Australia is the goal, and that's a huge amount, obviously, but it just really reinforces the significance of the scale of the problem when you have 116,000 people who are homeless on census night, and 200,000 people who are on waiting lists for social housing. Now, some of those will be overlapping, so it's not a matter of adding one to the other necessarily, but it just gives you a sense of the magnitude of the problem.
And you're talking about some change to the way that it's being approached at this time. And there might be listeners who can contribute on the sorts of things that you can see are not working and contributing to homelessness in Australia. We'll continue some more of that conversation. There's another initiative in which you've got coming up, and it's called the Sleep Out. I think it used to be called the CEO Sleep Out, or is it still that, James? But this idea of sleeping out and in solidarity with people who are homeless, getting an experience of what it is to be sleeping rough on the street, that's coming up pretty soon too, isn't it?
That's right. Now, it is important to distinguish between the CEO Sleep Out, which is something operated by a colleague, or, you know, another organization in the sector, Venisa, and they have very great success with that, with a particular CEO group. The Sleep Out that we are promoting is a more localized opportunity for people. It might be community groups or a group of people from a school, or amongst a group of friends and family. Be able to go onto our website and register the opportunity to actually hold a sleep out and raise funds and awareness, and for people to really get that sense of what it might be like to be sleeping somewhere unusual and not knowing where you're going to be sleeping the following night, and to really raise awareness of what the experience of being out of home or out of a home would be. I remember an interesting conversation a couple of years ago with a taxi driver who he asked me what I did, and I told him, and he said, "Oh, homelessness." He said, "Oh, I don't think anybody should be regarded as homeless unless they've been homeless for at least a fortnight." And I really thought, well, this is incredible that you would imagine that it would be acceptable to not know where you're staying night after night after night, and it would be only be after 2 weeks that you would be considered homeless. For people who are homeless every single night is an enormous challenge. It's not a matter of saying only after a period of time do you count as being homeless.
Let's talk here a little about this process that takes someone from having a roof over their head to actually being homeless, because for some it graduates, doesn't it, from losing your place where you live, and then if you have a car, you end up sleeping in the car, and that doesn't always work out too, and people even camping outside towns and in parks and places like that. Is there a typical sort of a process? Because not everybody has a big buffer behind them to ensure that if something goes wrong, they can continue to pay their rent. What sort of stories do you hear, James, about the process by which people actually end up on the street?
Well, Neil, you're right. There are a number of different ways it can happen. The one of the big areas where we're seeing a big increase in the number of people becoming homeless is families fleeing family and domestic violence situations. So generally, women leaving with children, escaping from a violent or difficult or dangerous, very difficult or dangerous domestic situation, and finding themselves instantly without a home. They've left their home, they've surrendered that, if you like, in order to protect themselves and protect their children. That is one of the leading causes of homelessness that we see at the moment, and it can be very, very hard for people in those circumstances to get back on their feet. Other examples, and you talk about the kind of the almost the drift, you know, you can't pay your rent, and then you're living in your car, and then that's not suitable, or the car breaks down, etc. And I think that's a really interesting picture to paint, because many people, even when they are homeless and living in temporary or unsuitable accommodation, don't actually realize that they would be categorized as homeless, are just focused on dealing with their day-to-day, and therefore aren't accessing the supports that are available to them, because there are supports around and available to people who are homeless. The drift, and it what we see is it can be a real trap. It's very, very hard once people have fallen through into a homeless or temporary unsuitable accommodation, that actually getting back into having a formal relationship with a landlord and a lease, particularly if you've defaulted on your rent because you've lost your job, and that's another classic cause that we see, people living from paycheck to paycheck, and in the what gets described as the gig economy, which again is a common phrase around at the moment, people working in a highly casualized workforce with unpredictable work and unpredictable income quickly find themselves unable to pay their rent. And if you get blacklisted by a landlord or an agent, it can be very, very hard to get back in.
James, wonderful, solid Christian foundations for the organisation that you lead, Mission Australia. Let me ask you your thoughts on what local churches might have as a role here when it comes to supporting efforts, when it comes to homelessness. As you say, there are supports for homeless people, but people who are on the verge of losing their home, they're sleeping in the car, they're camping in the park, they may not know what those supports are. And there is a responsibility and really an opportunity here, isn't there, for people in local churches who are concerned about pastoral care, because sometimes this happens to people who are in church life or people who are in the community and they come into contact with the church. There's a role to play here. How do you see churches actually contributing to a good response to the issue of homelessness?
Well, Neil, I think that's an excellent question. There are a number of different things that I think church communities could do. One is actually education, and educating people who, when they come to church services, taking those opportunities, whether it's preachers or other members of the congregation, taking an opportunity to actually educate the rest of the people attending about what homelessness is, and reducing this sense that homelessness is just rough sleepers, that actually homelessness exists for a number of different reasons, and this is how people can get into homelessness. And then by doing that, opening up a conversation around, well, and what happens if you think that you might be drifting in that direction? Here are the supports and opportunities that would be available to you. That might well be providing people with access to, it could just be providing someone with access to a telephone or access to the internet, for example, through parish resources or through church resources, to be able to access the facilities that are available to them in the community. But those things will, those conversations will necessarily only speak to people who are attending those church services. And I think there's a responsibility that people of faith across Australia have to outreaching into their local communities and recognizing that actually people who may well have been church attenders who have become homeless are so stigmatized by their experience of homelessness that one of the things they stop doing is they stop going to church, they stop going out and engaging in public life because they don't want to be asked questions about what's happened to them. It's important for us all to be connected to everyone within our wider community and with our church community and make sure that those people aren't falling off the edge.
Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
1-800-316-316 to join in our conversation talking through issues of homelessness today. James Toomey is the CEO at Mission Australia. James, when we talk solutions here, I know that one of the big challenges is just getting coordinated. And Australia's a big nation. Governments change with regularity so far as elections go. But you're calling for nationally coordinated plan to get on top of homelessness. How important is it to get a right strategy and to hold to it?
Oh, the absolutely having all governments coordinated and agreeing on the significance and importance of this would make an enormous difference. Each government recognises that there's a problem and an issue with homelessness. But what we see is a lack of coordination across governments, and also we as an organisation operate in a community services sector. We have a responsibility to work with the sector and with governments, and also with commercial Australia, including property builders, to work together to tackle the problem together. It isn't something that just one of those parties, if you like, can resolve on its own. And that kind of joined up approach where there's a recognition that this is a problem of significance, and a recognition that the solutions are, the numerical solution is understood. We can identify what we think the shortfall in affordable housing is. But I want to see a society where we get beyond just identifying what the numbers are and actually starting to identify what that means solution-wise in each state and territory, and then nationally across the country.
When we talk about this issue of having a serious commitment to building the new social housing, the affordable homes that you've been talking about, even a serious commitment to having a nationally coordinated plan, is there a sense in which it's hard to cut through and to make this, high on the public debate agenda? I'm not sure. I mean, these details came out a week or two ago, and your own release about some ideas about how you get on top of this. Have you had sort of, the public debate? Has it continued to bubble along, or is it really tough to cut through?
I've been very reassured, actually, by the public debate. I had a number of opportunities last week to meet with colleague organisations and to be able to be talking about these issues in the media as well. We launched last week, and were part of launching with other community sector providers, it's called Everybody's Home, which is an initiative around driving exactly the kind of coordinated approach that we're talking about. I think one of the challenges that we see, and what Mission Australia sees as one of the challenges, is actually the political cycle in Australia. Governments are elected for 3 years, and frequently it's difficult for either state and territory or federal government to make committing plans which extend beyond the political term of office. And what we see is that actually it's the short-term nature of, opportunistic planning, which solves, and to a large extent can be seen to solve and work with crisis, as people work people in crisis, without actually, systemically changing the fact that there is a lack of affordable housing being built or being made available. And that kind of change takes many, many years and exceeds the political cycle. So the will has to be one which is actually coming from the community to say, we want every government or every political party to sign up to say that this is a commitment that they would deliver to. So it doesn't really matter who's in government. We know that the commitment's going to be delivered on.
So community expectations, very important here. We're taking calls, 1800 316 316. Let's hear from Randall in Evenshope in Victoria. Hello, Randall. Welcome along.
Yeah, hi, Neil. I'd like to make a comment with regards to affordable homes. I'm mainly talking country Victoria, but it's possible anywhere in Australia. There's a couple of suggestions I'd make to people is that at this time there's a lot of influence with tiny homes from America and how people can build a home on a trailer and all this type of thing. I suggest they avoid that and they try to create a real home in a small package. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, there? Yes. It's, yeah. Keep going, Randall. Well, in fact, we've got to be quick here. I've only got a minute to the news, but yep, what are you...
Okay. I've spent some time developing designs and ideas for small homes that are real homes that will achieve low-interest bank finance and small loans for people which they can afford. Even the unemployed can afford a small home.
Randall, good thoughts there, and because we're short of time, a quick response here from James Toomey.
Look, I think those sorts of, that's the kind of innovation or examples of the sort of innovative approaches that will help tackle this problem. And picking up on the who can pay rent or pay a mortgage or a small low interest mortgage, there are other models around what's called shared equity, where a person basically is buying part of the home that they live in over a period of time, which means that the cost of the day-to-day cost of you know, servicing their...
I'm going to have to cut across this because we're about to go to news. Randall, thank you so much for your call. James Toomey, before we go any further, we were just getting into a conversation just before the news, and we had to break for the news. But our guest, our caller from Evenshope in Victoria, was talking about a form of social entrepreneurism, the idea that you can get into a low-cost house. And, you know, of course, there are complications around all of that, but it is going to need that sort of creative initiative from people in the private sector in order to really spark some real action here when it comes to homelessness. Is that the case?
That's right. I think we, you know, that kind of a recognition of the scale of the problem and the fact that you know, single organisations or single sectors of society aren't going to be able to solve these problems on their own. I was talking a little bit before the news about what are called shared equity models, where people are able to rent effectively by renting or paying down part of a mortgage of the house in which they live, and the other, you know, and an interest is retained by the owner, which is normally a housing provider. This provides people with a kind of certainty and of security of knowing that they're going to be living in the same place for a period of time, whilst at the same time investing in their own financial security by having this shared equity opportunity.
Of course, our caller was calling from country Victoria, and for people who are in the bush, there is a certain sense, isn't there? They can see cheap land, opportunities galore. People in the city don't necessarily see it that way, because if they did move to the country, you've got issues with employment and other challenges and moving away from other support networks and that sort of thing. What are your thoughts on what contribution country areas may well be able to play in homeless solutions? Because I imagine most homelessness probably is happening in cities, but what are your thoughts on country and city and their involvements?
Well, that's a good question. What we tend to see is that lower unemployment exists in and around cities, and that the higher rates of unemployment around the country can be in regional and remote Australia. So if people are seeking to be working, and many people, and this is another myth which I guess needs to be bust, many homeless people are actually working and they are making financial contribution and they have a job. But the availability of work tends to be concentrated very much on in urban areas. So creating employment opportunities, or even making it clear that there are employment opportunities in regional and remote Australia, because they do exist, and some of those, I know that those vacancies are unfilled. So clear that those vacancies exist, and but there are opportunities for people to go and live outside cities, and infrastructure. States can invest in infrastructure to make it possible for people to travel within a state without having to rely on, or finding it very difficult to travel around for work, by investments and improvements in infrastructure, moving people into areas where there are jobs and affordable homes available.
So when we talk about the government role, we're talking about creating the right conditions to address homelessness. I wonder whether you think that homelessness is actually taking a priority in the government's thinking when they're thinking about where they're allocating funds. Oftentimes it's probably more about re-election than it is about actually focusing on the real needs of perhaps people like the homeless. Is this part of the problem here, James?
I think when we come back to the question of hidden people who are hidden homeless, and there's a focus in many cities in Australia on rough sleepers and the issues confronting Australian cities with rough sleepers, and that's clearly a challenge for people who are sleeping rough in cities. And the approaches that are taken to provide emergency accommodation and emergency relief and support for people who are sleeping rough, and that's very, very important. What then tends to happen is that people can move into the what's kind of sort of invisible homelessness, which is that actually the majority of people who are homeless are in this kind of invisible situation, and it ceases to become something which to general voters, unless you are personally affected by homelessness, as a general member of the public who is voting, the importance for you starts to diminish because you think the problem has been solved because there are less rough sleepers. And so, for example, in Sydney, in the street count recently, the number of rough sleepers had gone down, but the statistics show that the number of homeless people in Sydney has actually gone up because there are people in unsuitable or temporary accommodation, which is increasing. But they're less visible to members of the public, and therefore it drops off people's personal radar when it comes to election time, I guess. And that's okay.
I was going to say, some of these drivers of homelessness, we mentioned some of those issues a little earlier when we mentioned domestic violence, but we haven't come to issues to do with mental health. Drugs and alcohol, these sorts of things are particularly interesting too to talk about as the ways that these problems of homelessness might be driven.
You're absolutely right. And how people come into homelessness, and we had a conversation a little earlier about painting a picture of how someone in a settled residential setting, in a home, couldn't pay their rent and then drifted into homelessness. What we also see is an increase in people who are coming out of either public care, so out of home care, they're being discharged as young adults leaving the public care system, and they are overrepresented in homeless figures. You touched on people with mental illnesses and also drug and alcohol, where we see people being discharged from psychiatric hospital or hospital settings for people who are hospitalized as a result of their challenges with their mental health, but not having anywhere to go when they've been discharged and being just left to fend effectively for themselves. Issues of drug and alcohol problem drug and alcohol misuse is overrepresented in homelessness population compared to the population at large. But, what any homeless person will say to you is if you haven't got, if you're not using drugs and alcohol when you become homeless, your chances are you will be fairly soon afterwards, because it's a coping strategy for many people who may themselves, that might not have been the reason they became homeless, but it becomes part of what traps people in homelessness.
1-800-316-316, if you'd like to join in our conversation. James, let's come back to some more of the solutions. It's good to have a solutions way that to talk about this issue of homelessness, because when we talked about having a national strategy, when we talked about some levels of social entrepreneurism, of governments creating the right conditions for people in the private sector to make a difference here. Other things that you've got on your list of solutions, things like tax breaks for property investment, how would that help with this whole issue?
Well, anybody who, in order to drive the opportunity for people to invest in developing housing, people invest in housing and people invest in building properties to rent and to sell because it is commercially profitable for them to do so, and I have no problem with that at all. That's the business that property developers in particular are in. But if you wanted to become a landlord of a large number of affordable homes, because of the problem of affordability of rent and the relatively low rents that you might be able to secure compared to renting to commercial, commercial tenants, what we see is there are opportunities there for governments by creating tax incentives for people actually to make those houses available to people on low incomes or who are getting rental support, Commonwealth rental assistance, for example. And if those things are made investable and are tax efficient for people to invest in, then what we see, and we see this in many other aspects in Australian society, people will then be able to make a choice about that being something they would invest in. It may well be that superannuation funds, for example, would see that as being an investable proposition. It's interesting that the superannuation funds, some Australian superannuation funds, are invested in social and affordable housing in the United States because the tax settings there are helpful, but are not able or not seeing those opportunities also here in Australia.
Okay, then there are issues with a rise in rent assistance. Obviously, this is more in the area of welfare reform and what governments might do to alleviate the stress on those who are facing homelessness. It's a different side of things to talk about the private sector and opportunities for people to be a little entrepreneurial here. But really, rent assistance, in your opinion, needs to increase or needs to have a wider catchment. How does rent assistance form part of a solution here?
Well, rent assistance enables a bridging of a gap between what a person, for example, on the minimum wage or in a low-paid job earns and what they have to actually pay in rent. And it's the gap which has arisen largely through increasing costs of housing with a powerful housing market. Anybody who is in, it's described as rental stress, anyone who's paying more than 30% of their income in rent, what we see is large amounts of people who are in rental stress paying more than 30% of their income in rent, and also large amounts of people paying more than 50% of their income in rent. So low-income families paying a third to a half of their income in rent, and this is where rental assistance, increasing the amount of rental assistance, means it's possible for people to maintain their housing and focus their generally low incomes onto other areas of family support, making sure their children have school uniforms or can afford to travel and undertake all the other activities, and people can afford to go to work and undertake all those other activities, because the more money you pay in rent, obviously, the less money you have to do other things.
James, when we think of the Australian economy and the sorts of reports that we might see in the news every day, and not everything is positive, but when you talk to the government about their creation of hundreds of thousands of new jobs over the past year, and the general perception that our economy in Australia is pretty good, and that things ought not to it should create the sort of environment where people are confident at least to do some things when it comes to solving some of these solutions. There's a certain sense in which when you think of the rising numbers of those who are homeless, you would think that shouldn't be happening right now. So there are a lot of other factors that are other than the economic factors that are at play here with the number of people becoming homeless. Let me ask you, when it comes to people who are on that process that we were talking about a little earlier, because it's always concerning when you think of ordinary families that look like they're doing well, but they still may only be, for some families, just a few weeks away from actually being homeless. People don't have a big buffer in their savings to be able to counter what might happen if there's a crisis, whether it's a health crisis or a job loss or a marriage breakdown or family issue. These sorts of things make a lot of people very close to homelessness themselves, doesn't it? It is a risky thing.
That's right. And you're absolutely right. With many years of uninterrupted growth in Australia and a strong economy and people in work, and yes, jobs have been created, but if the, as I said in the previous, when we were talking previously about the cost of rent and the cost of mortgages and the cost of rent, if that is taking up a huge amount of your income, then you've got no buffer. There's no saving. Opportunity savings are under challenge in Australia, and everything that in a family life can very, very quickly come unraveled with one major event that occurs. So somebody loses a job, or somebody is injured at work and unable to continue going to work, or there is a circumstance, a family breakdown where somebody feels that the relationship is unsustainable and they need to leave the family home. All of these things can be quite sudden. And also, as you say, people don't have a buffer and don't have anything to fall back on because the cost of, the general cost of living is high and wages are generally flat. And so, yes, it's absolutely right that more jobs are being created, and it's excellent that people are having those employment opportunities. But with significant amounts of people's income being spent on rent, it means there's very little to save for anything else.
Thanks to Rose, who left a comment on our Facebook page. Rose says, homelessness and affordability is a huge issue. In 1 year in my hometown, an hour from Melbourne, rent has risen by at least $50 a week, and house prices have risen over $100,000. To afford to buy, the kids and I had to live in a caravan behind a shop to avoid rent, and even then I could only afford a two-bedroom unit. Wages and government benefits have not risen to meet those rises. Add to that, to get into private rental, you need bonds, rent in advance, and then to afford electricity and bills, etc. It's a very depressing situation in Australia for people who are wanting to get a home. Thank you so much to Rose for that contribution. And we're taking calls on 1-800-316-316. Let's take a call from Beth in Queensland. Hello, Beth. Welcome along.
Hello, Neil. Just listening to the conversation, you've touched on the financial part of this, but what about the law? Is it making housing unaffordable by the input of law over our housing? There's lots of issues that I can see, even that last lady with the email. There's a separation there of sensibility, and everything has to be like they portray on the television shows.
Okay.
I think they've given people a false sense of need.
All the rules and regulations around rentals and those sorts of things. Let's get a thought from James.
It's a bit of it's an interesting one because there's a tendency, I think, to dislike the laws that we think make our lives difficult, but like the ones that that suit us. And so absolutely right, there is a legislative framework that all of this operates in. But then one of the things that we see, an opportunity that we see as an organization is in approving developments, local planning authorities can actually, could, if they chose to, and some do around Australia, mandate that a certain proportion of new developments, a certain proportion of the units or the flats or et cetera, which are coming, being built, are set aside for affordable tenants. And that's an example where a local planning decision can actually be made which puts more supply into the market. But what happens is that, we do see is, in some parts around the country, opposition to local, planning applications because people have a perception that people living in affordable accommodation are going to be a certain type of tenant, and they don't want those certain types of people living in their suburb, and they will perhaps object to a planning application hoping that those homes will be built somewhere else. So I think there's a personal. We all have a responsibility to take to make these this kind of accommodation available.
Thank you so much to Beth in Queensland for your call. And look, we're running out of time quickly. I don't want to miss talking through some of the issues surrounding Indigenous people, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. You've got some ideas into those communities too, James.
Well, we see that the particularly overcrowding is a significant problem, much, much more highly represented in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. And one of the opportunities is in all of the thinking about how we design and develop an affordable housing, a national affordable housing strategy, which is going to put more affordable houses, make more affordable houses available, is actually to work in consultation with people who are seeking that accommodation, rather than designing what we think the answer is, and developing culturally sensitive and appropriate models, particularly in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, and also encouraging, and again, this is perhaps a government opportunity, a legal or legislative setting, development of Aboriginal-controlled and led housing providers, specifically developed in areas of specific need, to develop opportunities for that particular group of our society.
James, running out of time, I do want to mention one more time this initiative that you've got coming up for those who are wanting to get alongside Mission Australia in these challenges. And you've got the Sleep Out coming up. It is the 30th anniversary. You've been doing this for a long time. And this Sleep Out gives people an opportunity to really align themselves, empathise with those who are sleeping rough. Your encouragement to people to get involved in this year's Sleep Out.
Absolutely. Thanks, Neil. We really encourage anyone who's interested in that at all to go onto the Mission Australia website. Just if you just Google Mission Australia, you'll be able to find the website there and look up what if there's a sleep out happening in your area. And if there isn't, whether you would feel as a community or a church group or a group of family and friends to create a sleep out opportunity. To raise funds and raise awareness and really drive a better understanding of what constitutes homelessness, and hopefully as a result create some new ideas and some new thinking about how we solve this very, very big problem.
Well, that Mission Australia website, it's easy, missionaustralia.com.au. And James, no doubt when people go on to the Mission Australia site, there'll be some resource there as to how you deal with some of these solutions orientation that we've been talking about today when it comes to our homelessness challenge. Some of these things that we've been talking about, they're easily accessible on your website?
Yep, there's information there on our recent release, media releases last week in relation to the census data, which is what's obviously driving this conversation at the moment. Also opportunities. If people themselves are seeking a service or themselves are homeless or feel they're at risk of homelessness, there's information there on the website as well, very much so.
Well, James Toomey is the CEO at Mission Australia, and as you can hear, there are solutions and there are things that need to be talked about when it comes to addressing this issue of homelessness. And the church has a role to play, being armed with the facts, armed with some resource, some information about how to help people in the community. It's a real benefit. MissionAustralia.com.au. James Toomey, thanks so much for taking some time to share your thoughts with us today on 2020.
Thanks, Neil. It's been great to be with you.
Before you go, thanks for listening.
There's lots more great audio on demand, or you can listen to us live at visionradio.org.au.
And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation,
large or small,
will help us continue connecting faith to life for hundreds of thousands of people across Australia and around the world.
Learn more or donate today at visionradio.org.au.